The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, Volume 8, featuring these two episodes. Episode 1, The Vanishing White Elephant. Episode 2, The Manor House Case. The radio programs appearing in this audiobook were written by Dennis Green, Bruce Taylor, and Anthony Boucher, based upon the characters and suggested by incidents appearing in stories created by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in his Sherlock Holmes detective novels, featuring narration by Basil Rathbone as Sherlock and Nigel Bruce as Dr. Watson. The radio show's host is Harry Bartell.
Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell about an exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. And now let's see if our old friend Dr. Watson's expected. He's out on the patio. Dr. Watson?
Sit out here this evening, my boy.
Oh, swell idea, Doctor. It certainly is a beautiful night.
It certainly is. Draw up a chair and make yourself comfortable. That's it. You care for some of my tobacco?
I think I'll stick to a cigarette, thanks. Well, Doctor, all ready for tonight's adventure?
Yes, Mr. Bartell, I'm all ready. And a strange story it was. A very strange story.
How did it begin? Stormy December night in 1900 with the rain pelting against the Baker Street windows. Or perhaps with you and the great Sherlock Holmes rattling along in a cab beside the foggy waterfront chasing some desperate criminal.
You make quite a good storyteller yourself, Mr. Bartell. No. The adventure I'm going to tell you took place many, many thousands of miles afield from our Baker Street headquarters. To be exact, in the Indian city of Parbatipur, about 200 miles north of Calcutta.
It must have been a mighty important case that made you both travel that far.
It certainly was, my boy, yes. It was an answer in the summer of the 1894, I remember, that Holmes received an urgent summons from the Maharaja of Parbatipur. After 5 weeks at sea, we reached Calcutta, and a few days later found ourselves on the veranda of our hotel in Parbatipur. As we sat there talking to the Maharaja's brother, Rabat Singh, we could hear the faint throb of native drums and the haunting wail of an Indian lute coming from the bazaar.
And so, gentlemen, I thought that before I took you over to my brother's palace, I would tell you something of the problems that beset him.
An excellent idea, Mr. Singh.
Yes, indeed, sir. Particularly as you've just told us your brother, the Maharaja, is not in the best of health.
Just so, Dr. Watson. Interviews tire him, and in any case, his command of the English language is not so extensive as mine.
And now, sir, the problem, if you please.
As to the exact problem, Mr. Holmes, I am not completely informed. My dear brother has not seen fit to confide his entire troubles, even to me. In fact, until your arrival yesterday, I did not even know that you had been sent for. But I can tell you that his worries are centered on the safety of the white elephant of Parbatipur.
White elephant?
Well, possibly you are not aware that white elephants actually do exist.
Oh, yes, though I understand that they're extremely rare.
Oh, extremely, Mr.
Am I right in thinking that in the East a white elephant is considered sacred?
Quite right.
Pray continue, sir.
Well, in 1750, the first white elephant was presented to my great-great-grandfather, and with it came a legend. The legend that the Maharaja's rule would be happy, healthy, and successful only as long as the elephant flourished. If the animal were to die, then the rain would come to an end, and the Maharaja was doomed to a sudden death.
Mr. Singh, who was responsible for the origin of this legend?
Oh, a good and wise man who traveled from the mountains beyond Nepal. He it was who brought the first elephant to my great-great-grandfather.
And how has the legend worked out in actual practice, sir?
Its prophecies have come frighteningly true, Dr. Watson.
Oh?
The first elephant was killed by his mahout, his own keeper, after my illustrious ancestor had dismissed the man for incompetence. A week later, my great-great-grandfather was himself killed in a native uprising. And so it has gone on, gentlemen, since then.
Amazing, sir, amazing.
When the elephants have died, and they have always died, the Maharaja of Vaputipur has died a violent death soon after. And as each new Maharaja has succeeded to the title, the wise man from the beyond the mountains has appeared, and with him, a new sacred white elephant. He last appeared 4 years ago when my brother inherited the title.
But it can't still be the same man, sir.
Why not, Doctor?
Well, I mean to say, that'd make him a couple of hundred years old.
A trifle less, I fancy, Doctor.
Really, my dear sir, it seems to me your story's the wrong way round. Men don't live to such an age, whereas elephants are noted for their length of life.
That's true, Watson, but apparently not the sacred white ones of Parbatipur. Mr. Singh, in the event that your brother's death, who would become the Maharaja?
I should, Mr. Holmes. Oh, I can see what you are thinking, sir. The next in line to succeed to the title would have an excellent motive for wishing the animal dead.
Well, the logic is inescapable. But the thought had no personal implications, I assure you.
Well, I'm very anxious to see this fabulous animal.
The sacred white elephant is never seen except at the yearly festival that celebrates another anniversary of the Maharaja's rule.
So the animal is only seen once a year, eh?
Yes, Mr. Holmes.
And when is the next anniversary, may I ask?
In 2 weeks' time.
No, our arrival seems to have coincided very nicely with the ceremony.
Yes, Watson, a fact that I'm sure is not coincidental. Well, Mr. Singh, I'm very glad that you told us the legend of the sacred white elephant, and now I suggest that you take us to the palace. I'm most anxious to make the Maharaja's acquaintance.
This is the council chamber, gentlemen. If you will wait here a moment, I will go and see if my brother is well enough to receive you.
Very well, sir.
Oh, my soul, Holmes, I'm not easily impressed, but this palace is absolutely staggering in its magnificence.
Yes, it does rather take one's breath away, doesn't it?
It does.
This floor is of the finest marble, and unless I'm much mistaken, that magnificent rug is a genuine Bukhara. Yes, by Jove, it is.
I could swear that the staircase we mounted a moment ago had railings of solid gold.
You did, old chap.
It did.
This is a country of paradoxes, where opulence beyond the dreams of Midas rubs shoulders with the direst poverty.
And yet, looking at a palace like this, it's not hard to see why India is called the brightest jewel in the diadem of the British Empire. Good Lord, what's that?
That is an elephant trumpeting.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. Do you suppose it's the sacred white one?
Undoubtedly. You will recall the Maharaja's brother told us it's the only one at the palace.
Cheers. It's an odd sound.
Yes, a very comforting one. The animal seems to be in the best of health.
Who waits in the Maharaja's council
room? Good gracious me, you gave me a start. I didn't hear you come in.
And my friend and I are waiting for an audience with His Highness.
No one can hold audience with the Maharaja. Please to leave.
Now look here, my good fellow.
Watson,
please to leave.
Watson.
What?
We've traveled 12,000 miles to see the Maharaja, sir, at his request. In any case, his brother is with him now arranging an audience.
I am Mada, the Maharaja's physician and chief counselor. And I tell you, you cannot hold audience today.
And I tell you that I haven't the slightest intention of leaving the palace without seeing him.
You defy authority of mother? Saila!
Azur?
Saiblu ke lay jao.
Now, I warn you that if I have any...
Oh, I'm glad you're back, Mr. Singh. This fellow told us that we couldn't see your brother.
And furthermore, he seems to labor under the misapprehension that he can have us thrown bodily out of the palace.
Mother, you do not understand. These are the gentlemen my brother wishes to see. From England, he has sent for them.
It was against my counsel they were summoned. No good will come of this.
Follow me, gentlemen. My brother, the Maharaja, will see you now. But please do not stay with him too long. He is far from well.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, I'm so happy you have arrived here safely. It was great imposition to ask you to travel so far.
Oh, not at all, sir. I only hope we can prove of material assistance to you.
Ranji?
Yes, Rabat?
I wish you would permit Dr. Watson to examine you.
I just was about to suggest myself, sir. In fact, I brought my medical bag along just in case.
Mada would not approve. Mada not believe in Occidental medicine.
I do not trust Nada. I do not think he wishes you to get well. Please, Ranji, let the doctor examine you.
Very well. But you not tell Nada.
And now, what seems to be the trouble, Your Highness?
My eyes, they torture me. Night and day, they torture me.
Yes, I notice they seem very inflamed. Now, let me take a look at them. Yes. Now, open them a little wider, please, sir.
I throb, burn, night and day. Night, day, burn.
The color is distinctly reddened. However, this isn't anything very, very serious, sir. What you're suffering from is a case of what we call conjunctivitis.
What you do relieve pain, doctor?
Oh, some eye drops will give you relief in no time, sir. I have some here in my bag.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Perhaps medicine will help.
Yes, I'm sure it will, sir. Here you are. Now, this small bottle and an eyedropper. This is an eyedropper. Just put a few drops in the corner of each eye, and I'm sure that you'll get some relief in no time at all.
Thank you, Dr. Watson.
You think there is nothing seriously wrong, Doctor? Mother gave it as his opinion that my brother's eyesight was in serious danger.
Well, upon my saying so, I think it more likely that my medical knowledge exceeds his. I can assure you there's nothing seriously the matter with your brother's eyes, sir.
I'm happy you say so. Now you will please excuse me while I take medication and rest a little. We discuss my problems later. Quarters already prepared for you in palace. You do not mind, Mr. Holmes?
Not at all, sir. Though in the interim, I should like to employ my time to the full by inspecting your sacred white elephant.
No. No, that I cannot allow. I must talk to you first.
I think, sir, you will do well to give me permission to see the animal. I already have my suspicions as to your reason for bringing me here, and it will be best if I'm completely informed when we have our discussion.
Very well. Can do no harm. Here. Take ring. Show ring to Sucro. He's keeper of animal. Sucro will let you into elephant house when he sees ring.
Thank you, sir. And please rest comfortably. I'm sure that your worries are nearly at an end. Come on, Watson.
This was the elephant house. Why in thunder doesn't the keeper open the door?
I imagine because his mind is preoccupied with music. Knock again, old fellow, will you? He heard us that time.
Yeah, about time. We must have been knocking here for 5 or 6 minutes.
Alarm, sir. Here I'm on it.
Tada hati tekni ko asti.
Tum tekni ne sekta.
Sekta. Maharaja sahib. Kum ko asti mafik dio.
Both out yourself. Eat her out.
Say, Holmes, the Maharaja's ring certainly seemed to do the trick. He didn't want to let us in until you showed it to him, did he?
Good and faithful servant, our friend Sucro.
Kier, kutai!
Kier!
Hati, fagir!
Fagir! Kasamapit.
Nezut ai, sir.
What's happened, Holmes?
The white elephant has disappeared, Watson.
Disappeared? That's ridiculous. Elephants don't just disappear.
Kier, kari, sir.
Maharaja sahib kibolo. Kali, kibolo.
Where's he going?
I told him to go to the Maharaja and give him the news. But he was to tell it to no one else.
But Holmes, this is ridiculous. We heard the animal trumpeting here less than half an hour ago. How can an elephant be spirited away in that amount of time?
That's what we have to find out, my dear fellow. I have often heard of the Indian rope trick. Now we have a first-hand opportunity of solving a new mystery, the problem of the disappearing elephant.
Spent half an hour searching this elephant house. After all, an elephant isn't exactly insignificant. I doubt if you're going to find it under those boards in the corner over there.
True, Watson, but nonetheless, there are interesting clues to be observed.
Clues? What clues?
Come over here, old chap.
Bloodstains. Great Scott, you're not suggesting that's elephant's blood?
It's hard to say, though I would venture the opinion that it would require the blood of several human corpses to produce an equivalent amount of blood. In any case, you will notice that the stains are dried and old.
Hello? That must be the elephant keeper back from the palace.
Dr. Watson! His mother, the Maharaja's physician.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson, at once you must come back to the palace.
What's wrong, sir?
This is the Maharaja.
Death has come to him.
Dead? Great heavens.
Exactly what happened?
Sukru, keeper of the elephant, came to the Maharaja. He said he had a most important message to deliver.
He had. I told him to deliver it. Then what happened?
A few moments later, I heard cries. I went to the Maharaja's room and found him in delirium. He was saying about the elephant having disappeared. His brother and I tried to give comfort to him, but we could do nothing. His breathing became more and more labored. Finally, it stopped altogether.
So the doom of Parvatipur is fulfilled once again. The elephant is gone and the Maharaja's reign is ended. Come on. We must go to the palace.
Yes, I must examine the body at once.
You're certain it was a natural death, Mr. Mara?
Positive, Mr.
No Holmes. Symptoms of poisoning, for example?
Mr. Holmes, I have read some of your sensational stories in which obscure deaths are attributed to a subtle oriental poison unknown to Western science. I can assure you that if the Maharaja has been poisoned, it has been caused by no poison known to me.
When did he last eat?
Over 8 hours ago.
Well, possibly died of shock, Holmes. Shock and hysteria. When he knew that the elephant had vanished.
Yes, it's possible, but it's murder just the same.
Murder? Why do you say that, Mr. Holmes?
Because whoever caused the elephant to disappear did it with the deliberate intention of ending the Maharaja's reign. A diabolical plot, and one that I intend to overcome before this day is out.
Dr. Watson's story will continue in just a second, so all I'm going to say is, if you like a swell red wine with your dinner, well, then you should know about Petri California Burgundy. Petri Burgundy is a rich, hearty red wine that's just wonderful with hamburger and beef stew and pot roast and chops and, well, just about any meat or meat dish you can think of. And, of course, if you can get hold of a steak or a prime rib, well, then you've just got to serve that with Petri Burgundy. Petri Burgundy is a swell mealtime wine. The best friend a good meal ever had. No kidding.
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
This must be the house, the only one that's near the elephant pen. Ramshackle-looking place, isn't it?
Extremely. Sukro! Sukro!
Don't tell me that he's vanished, too. Business is beginning to get on my nerves.
Sukro! I think under the circumstances, we'll take the liberty of entering. Sukro!
Look, Holmes. Look on the floor.
We're too late.
Good Lord. What a horrible sight. His throat's been cut.
Obviously, another murder. He knew the secret of the vanishing elephant. Let's have a look around. Sukro was quite a musician. Look at this weird assortment of instruments. Native lute.
Well, we heard him playing that today as we approached the elephant house.
What's this?
Looks like a sort of giant megaphone.
It's a musical instrument of some kind. Observe the mouthpiece here. Let's see what kind of noise it makes.
Great Scott. The instrument sounds exactly like an elephant trumpeting.
Of course. Thumbs, Carl, why didn't I think of this before? Come on, Watson, back to the palace as fast as your legs can carry you. The mystery is solved.
Say you have solved the problem of the missing elephant, Mr.
Holmes.
Yes, sir.
And also the cause of your brother's death and Sukro's murder.
Indeed. That is very important news. Won't you both sit down, please?
Thank you, sir.
Please proceed, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you. First, the elephant did not vanish today. The beast must have died a natural death months ago. All that happened today was that I discovered its absence.
Are you suggesting that my brother knew the beast was dead?
I am, sir. But he was afraid to publish the news. He knew that his rule would fall into a state of chaos if the fact were known. You yourself, sir, have told us how strong is the native belief in this legend.
Well, how did he dispose of the elephant?
Unobtrusively, over a period of time. The bloodstains in the elephant house would indicate that the animal had been cut up into disposable fragments, which could be removed by the faithful Sukro without attracting suspicion. All this time, though, the elephant horn was blown at suitable intervals to indicate that the sacred animal was still alive.
But if the Maharaja knew the beast was dead, why did he die of shock when he received the news?
I think the answer to that question, Dr. Watson, would be that my brother died of shame when he knew that his imposture had been discovered.
A little far-fetched, sir, if you don't mind my saying so. No, I'm certain the reason your brother brought me to your country was to reveal that imposture to me. He knew the day was coming soon when he must show the elephant to his people. The festival would have been held in 2 weeks' time, I think you told us, sir. I imagine that he wanted me to devise a method of smuggling a new white elephant into the palace grounds before that time.
Tell me, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, why did my brother die today?
Because he was murdered. Just as Sucro was murdered later.
Murdered? How?
Oh, very ingeniously. By poison, but not, as you might expect, by any subtle eastern poison. No, one of the most recent of western poisons was used. A poison unknown to oriental science. Delirium, followed by a strangulated breathing, is highly typical of the newly discovered poison, hyoscyamine.
But he hadn't eaten for 8 hours.
True, Watson, but you see, this hyoscyamine was administered to an eyedropper.
Good heavens, an eyedropper.
What? The poison penetrates with unusual ease through the membranes of the eyes, if you will recall.
Yes, you're right, by Joe, it does. It must have been that physician fellow, Mardo, whatever his name is.
No, my dear chap. This has been a case of confusions. Let's do a little clear thinking now, shall we? You see, we were deceived by the apparent sequence of events. We discovered the elephant missing and thought that fact had caused the Maharaja's death.
Whereas his murder was quite a separate matter. The poison must have been placed in the eye drops while we were in the elephant house.
Precisely, dear chap. And when the murderer saw how the problem of the missing elephant confused us, he killed its unfortunate keeper to prevent us from learning the truth. Yes, you're strangely silent, Mr. Singh.
Am I, Mr. Holmes? I am fascinated by your flow of unassailable logic. Of course, you realize that I am now the Maharaja, the King of Kings, an absolute ruler with all power, including that of the police. Do you care to denounce the murderer to me?
Oh, come, sir. I think it's time the buttons came off our foils. I'm well aware that you studied medicine at the University of Edinburgh. You have the motive, the opportunity, and the knowledge to kill your brother. The murder of Sucro was probably performed by an underling.
Great Scott, what a shocking...
You are a clever man, Mr. Holmes. A very clever man.
Clever enough to realize that an absolute ruler, a ruler with all powers, including that of the police, is not apt to denounce himself.
Again, your logic is unassailable. Goodbye, gentlemen. I trust your voyage home will be a pleasant one.
I warn you, sir, that I shall make a full report of my findings in this case to the British Commissioner for this state.
Why should he prove more effectual than the great Sherlock Holmes? Goodbye, gentlemen, and bon voyage.
Filthy murderer. Makes my blood boil to think that he can't be brought to justice.
But he can, and he will be. The civilized laws of the Occident cannot be enforced here. Then we must fight him with his own weapons.
What do you mean, Holmes?
That we have a farewell talk with Mr. Madder, the dead Maharaja's physician, friend, and counselor.
This is a terrible story you have told me, Mr. Holmes. My beloved ruler murdered by his own brother, and yet he cannot be made to account for his crimes.
He can be, sir, if you will help Mr. Holmes.
Of course I will. What can I do?
Try and obtain the eye drops before they're destroyed, will you? Have them analyzed by a Western scientist and forward the reports to me in London. I'll take the necessary action.
I will try to do that, Mr. Holmes. But if I fail, there is one other way I can avenge my master's death. In a few weeks, the new Maharaja will be enthroned.
Ah. I understand you, sir. The wise man from beyond the mountains of Nepal will bring a new white elephant. Perhaps an elephant that will not live very long.
You understand me perfectly, Mr. Holmes. I can promise you that the elephant will die in a very short time. And with it, the new Maharaja. My master shall be avenged.
quite a story, Doctor. Quite a story. And tell me, what did happen to the next white elephant of Parvatipur?
By an extraordinary coincidence, it died the day after the new Maharaja's enthronement. And that scoundrel was himself killed in an uprising that occurred just a few days later.
You know something? I think I could be very happy as an Indian Maharaja.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Beautiful palace, yeah. Beautiful women, beautiful jewels. And every year on my birthday, the natives would give me my weight in gold. You know, I could learn to like that. Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and is based on an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Engineer's Thumb. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studios. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System. This episode from the life of Sherlock Holmes will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Petri Wine brings you Basil Rathbone and Nigel Bruce in the new adventures of Sherlock Holmes. The Petri family, the family that took time to bring you good wine, invite you to listen to Dr. Watson tell us another exciting adventure he shared with his old friend, that master detective, Sherlock Holmes. Well, here's the patio of Dr. Watson's Northern California bungalow, but where's the doctor?
Here I am, Mr. Bartell, out in the garden.
Okay, I'll be right there. Oh, sitting by the fish pond, huh, Doctor?
Yes, my boy. It's rather pleasant out here for a change. Has it ever occurred to you how stupid the expression of a goldfish is, Mr. Bartell?
Well, I can't say I've ever given it much thought, Doctor. Why?
You see this foolish little fellow here with his silly little mouth opening and closing as though he were constantly astonished?
What is this? I thought you were a fish lover.
Yes, I am. But as I was brooding over tonight's story, that goldfish seemed to be making faces at me as though it was trying to remind me of how my face must have looked on a certain June evening in 1890.
It sounds to me as if you're going to tell a story against yourself, Doctor.
I am, young fellow, my lad.
What happened?
One Sunday morning in 1890, I dropped round to visit my friend in Baker Street. Mrs. Hudson told me that he was out, but suggested that I wait in our old rooms for his return and promised me a pot of strong tea, some buttered scones as an inducement. As I walked into the sitting room, I was astonished to see Holmes standing there, a bag in one hand and a coat in the other.
My dear chap, how are you?
I'm fine, Holmes. I'm surprised to see you, though. Mrs. Hudson told me that you were out.
I have been, Watson, on a case. I just returned by my private entrance for some necessary apparatus.
Oh, could I come with you? My wife's away, you know, but my practice is quite slack at the moment.
Not even my trusty old friend Watson can accompany me on this case. It's a ticklish business. The fate of two nations hangs in the balance. I must work alone. Sorry to leave you like this, old fellow. Goodbye.
Wait a minute. Mrs. Hudson's making me some tea and some buttered scones. Can't you wait and share them with me?
Ha ha. Good old Watson. You're the one fixed point in a changing age. Empires are tottering and you talk of tea and buttered scones.
Oh, I'm sorry you must be awful. Goodbye, old fellow.
Don't look so sad, old fellow. The time is ripe. I'll tell you all about the case and you can write it up in your memoirs. Goodbye, old boy.
Buttered scones. I haven't got any appetite for them now.
Did you enjoy the scones, Dr. Watson?
Well, I'm afraid my appetite disappeared when Mr. Holmes left.
It did it? I see you've eaten them all just the same.
What? Oh, yes, so I did.
I've got a surprise for you, Doctor. Inspector Lestrade is downstairs.
Who is he?
He came to see Mr. Holmes, but when I told him he was out, the inspector said he'd like to see you.
Oh, he did? Oh, Splendid. Ask him to come up, please, will you, Mrs. Hudson?
Aye, sir.
Will you come up, please, Inspector?
Thank you, Mrs. Hudson.
Can I butter you up a few more scones,
Doctor? No, thank you. I really couldn't eat them.
I'll just go and make some more the same. He'll eat them if I fix them, Doctor.
No, really, thank you. There you are, Lestrade.
Hello, Dr. Watson. Here's a pretty kettle of fish and no mistake.
Huh? What's the trouble?
Well, I want Mr. Holmes' help on a most important case. Where's he gone?
Well, he's out on a very secret matter.
You know where he is, Doctor?
Well, naturally I know where he is, Lestrade. My old friend never keeps me in the dark. But I'm not at liberty to tell you. Babson, I could help you a bit. After all, I'm not exactly unfamiliar with my friend's methods.
That's true, but just the same. Oh, well, Doctor, two heads are always better than one. Even if one is a sheep's head, as my old mother used to say.
Are you suggesting that I'm a sheep's head?
No, I'm not suggesting anything, Doctor. I'm just telling you what my old mother used to say.
I'm really not very interested in what your old mother used to say. Oh. And now, Lestrade, your problem, please.
Well, it's simple enough, Doctor. A German diplomat, Graf Otto von Heldenstern is his name, is in England on a very secret mission.
Graf Otto von Heldenstern? Huh. Yes, I've heard of him. Pray continue.
Well, this von Heldenstern, staying at the manor house at Hampton Wick, not far out of London. This morning, somebody slipped past his guards and threw a bomb into his study. His secretary was killed, and he would have been too, if it hadn't been that he'd left the room a few minutes earlier.
Well, these second-hand investigations are very little useless, Todd. We must both go down to the manor house at Hampton Wick and examine the situation on the spot.
All right.
Get out the timetable and look up the next train, will you?
Yeah.
And while you're doing that, I'll go and tell Mrs. Hudson where I'm going.
All right, you are, Doctor.
Doctor, I was just bringing them up to you.
Scones? Who can think of scones when an empire is tottering?
You're sure you're feeling quite well, Doctor?
Of course I am. Now, listen to me, Mrs. Hudson. If Mr. Holmes should return, please tell him that I've gone to Hampton Wick with Inspector Lestrade to investigate the von Heldenstern business.
The von Heldenstern business? Aye, Doctor, I'll tell him that.
Mr. Holmes didn't tell you where he was going, did he?
No, Doctor, he didn't.
Oh, I see. All right. Well, thank you, Mrs. Hudson. Thank you.
Are you sure you don't want the scones, Doctor?
I might as well take them along. I dare say Lestrade could eat them.
Ah, you're the one, Doctor.
Yes, I suppose this is rather exciting. Just the same, I wish I knew what Holmes was doing at this moment.
You are Herr Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I presume Graf Otto von Heldenstern is expecting me.
Yeah, Herr Holmes. He was so anxious that you would come here to the manor house.
I left immediately after I got his summons.
He's very weak. He has lost much blood from the injuries he received this morning.
Injuries that no one knows about, eh?
Nein, Herr Holmes. Mm-hmm. Only I, his old and faithful servant, knows. Follow me, please. I will take you to him.
Franz, is that you, Franz?
Ja, Herr Graf. And with me is Herr Sherlock Holmes.
Oh. Thank heaven you are here, Holmes.
I hope I can be of service to you, sir.
You can. You can be of great service. Sit close to my bed, Holmes. I have not much strength to speak.
I'm listening, Herr Graf.
You must impersonate me.
Yes, so I gathered when I received your message.
I am in England on a most delicate and important mission for the German government. Within a few weeks, your government and mine will conclude a treaty outlining the German and British spheres of interest in Africa.
I see. Obviously, that bomb was thrown this morning by someone who does not wish the treaty to be concluded.
Yeah, exactly, Herr Holmes. That is why you must impersonate me. In 24 hours' time, I shall be well enough to resume my work. In the meanwhile, You can keep the secret of my injuries and also have the opportunity of finding the assassin.
I'm quite prepared to undertake the impersonation, sir, but how can I possibly hope to deceive the members of your personal staff?
With the exception of Franz here and poor Fräulein Ullmeier, who was killed in the explosion that injured me, my staff is new. They have joined me here from the German consulate in London. They will believe that you are me.
Very well, sir. I'll try it.
I have heard of your skill in the art of disguises. And also, it seems to me we are not so unlike each other.
I was about to comment on that fact myself, sir. Yes, I think that a moustache and side whiskers will work wonders. If I can make the accent reasonably convincing.
I will coach you, my friend.
Splendid. Help me off with my coat, will you, Franz? Get me towels and a mirror.
Jawohl, Herr Holmes.
And while I'm applying my makeup, Herr Graf, perhaps you will be so good as to give me the complete circumstances regarding this morning's attempt on your life. If I'm to impersonate you successfully, I must have all the facts at my fingertips.
Wunderbar. It is amazing, Herr Holmes. Even I can hardly tell you from my mask.
Yes, I think it's the wig that puts the finishing touch into my disguise. How does it look to you, Herr Graf?
Mm-hmm. Colossal. I feel as if I were looking into a mirror.
And my accent, you find it reasonably convincing?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Extremely so. Try it once again, Herr Holmes.
Yeah, Herr Graf. It gives me the greatest pleasure to do what you ask of me.
Prächtig, splendid, Herr Holmes, splendid.
A cab is drawn up at the gate. Two men are getting out. You can see them from the window here.
Oh, it's the police, possibly, or...
Great Scott! It's Watson and Lestrade.
Friends of yours, Herr Holmes?
One of them is my close colleague, and the other is a detective inspector from Scotland Yard.
Oh, you must keep up the deception, even with your friends.
As a matter of fact, my friend's investigations will prove an excellent mask for my own search for the assassin. But, well, this is a delicious situation. I hope they won't recognize me.
I am Graf Otto von Heldenstein, gentlemen. You wish to see me?
How do you do, sir? My name is Watson, Dr. Watson, and this is Inspector Lestrade of Scotland Yard.
How do you do, sir?
Inspector, Dr. Watson, may I ask if I have the great distinction of addressing the Dr. Watson, friend of Sherlock Holmes?
Oh, I'm very flattered that you know me, Herr Graf.
But who does not know the great Dr. Watson? In my country, many people think that you are the real brains of the combination. Tell me, Herr Doctor, is that true?
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that, sir.
Of course, you have both come here to investigate what occurred this morning.
Yes, we have, sir.
Please sit down. If you can find any furniture that is unbroken.
Oh, thank you, sir. I must say the place is in a bit of a mess. And now, Herr Graf, please tell us exactly what happened.
Yeah. I will tell you everything, Herr Doctor. This morning I was working in here with my secretary, poor Fräulein Ullmeier. I had occasion to go upstairs to my room to get some necessary papers. As I came down the staircase and to return here, I heard a scream from Fräulein Ullmeier. A moment later, there was a most frightful explosion. The concussion stunned me. When I came to, my poor secretary was dead.
Yeah, what people were inside the house at the time of the explosion?
The servants were all at the church. The only people here was my secretary, who was killed. My servant, Franz. I can vouch for him because he was upstairs when I went for my documents. There were three other people in the house, however. Madame Lisa Varona, my hostess and the owner of this house. A young Englishman from the Home Office. His name is Hilary Adams. And the third person in the house was a member of the German embassy, Colonel Schweiger.
Oh, then it's just a matter of cross-questioning the three of them as to their alibis at the time of the explosion. I'll take them one at a time, Lestrade. Ring for that servant fellow. What was his name?
Franz.
Franz, that's
the name. This is a rare privilege to watch a master detective at work.
Yes, Herr Graf, I shouldn't be surprised if my methods teach you quite a bit about the art of detection.
Herr Dr. Watson, this is Colonel Schweiger of the German Embassy.
Where were you, Colonel Schweiger, when the explosion occurred this morning?
I was discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with one of the guards near the front gates.
Yeah, well, what was the name of the guard, sir?
Carter. and Mr. Arthur Carter.
Yeah, I'll check on that.
Thank you, Colonel Schweiger. Please ask Madam Lissa Verona to come in with us.
Questions, nothing but questions. Leave me alone.
Sorry, madam. All I want to know is, where were you when the explosion occurred this morning?
Where was I? In my boudoir, listening to that stupid babblings of the young Englishman, Hilary Adams. Herr Graf, when I offered you my house, I did not know that I would have to put up with the lovemaking of your staff. Everywhere he followed.
No. Please don't get so excited, Madame Verona.
Questions. Stupid young English puppy is making calf eyes at me. My beautiful house blown to pieces, and all you do is...
Mr. Adams, where were you when the explosion occurred?
In Madame Verona's suite.
You swear to that?
Of course I do. You may ask her.
I've already done so, sir. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Thank you. That's all. You may go. Well, Lestrade, did you check on Colonel Schweiger's alibi?
Yes, Doctor. He was telling the truth. He was talking to the Colonel when the explosion happened.
Dear me, Herr Doctor, your examination has not been very successful, has it, sir? Everyone has an alibi.
Yes, but the alibis of Madame Verona and the young Englishman, Hilary Adams, depend on each other's words. They might be lying. And you've been dealing with criminals as long as I have, Herr Graf. You learn to look far deeper than the obvious. Yes, Lestrade and I shall return to London now and make some inquiries. You will hear from me, sir, before the day is over.
Ah, yes. Well, I'm much obliged to you, Doctor, for a very nice meal. Although we've been talking in circles...
Not entirely. Anyway, I have come to one important decision.
Oh, and what's that, Doctor?
Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs. The pupils of her eyes were contracted to pinpoints. It's an invariable indication of drug addiction. Lestrade, you go to Scotland Yard and see what you can find out about her, and I'll go back to my house. You can meet me there later. Yes, I wish Mary wasn't away. It's a cook's night out, confound it. I can't see a thing. I'll strike a match. That's better. Hello? Who's that in the drawing room? Who is it?
Watson! I thought you'd never come.
Holmes, where on earth do you spring from?
Never mind that, old chap. I've come to warn you. Keep out of the von Hildenstein business if you value your life.
Well, how did you know that I was working on the case?
I'm not to tell you now, but I implore you. Keep out of it. There are dangerous forces at work. Forces that would snuff out your life without a thought. Please believe me, old chap. And do as I... Quick, Watson! Under the dining room! Bomb! Bomb! Bomb!
We now return to Act Two of Timely Audio's presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
And now back to Dr. Watson and tonight's adventure, the Manor House case. Well, that was a fine place to break off your story, Doctor, I must say.
Mr. Bartell, I thought I'd keep you in as much suspense as possible.
Well, what happened next? Were you and Holmes injured when that bomb exploded?
No, my boy. The concussion of the explosion knocked me out for a few minutes. When I came to, Holmes had disappeared.
And I can imagine where he'd gone. Go on, Doctor.
Soon after that, Lestrade arrived on the scene, and after a quick and fruitless examination of the premises, we decided to return once more to the manor house. And so, an hour later, I was telling my story to the man I still thought to be the Graf Otto von Hildenstein.
But this is dreadful, Herr Doctor. The bomb might easily have killed you.
Oh, I was ready for it, sir. Quick thinking and presence of mind are my stock in trade, you know. When I heard the crash, I flung myself under the dining room table.
I'm most distressed that you yourself should be exposed to such danger.
Not at all, Herr Graf. As a matter of fact, I exposed myself deliberately to the attack. It's an old army trick, you know, what we call drawing the enemy's fire.
Calm now, Doctor. You don't mean to tell us that you expected to have that bomb chucked through the window at you?
Of course I did, Lestrade. The assassin knew that I was in working on the case. He followed me to London and fell into my trap, just as I intended him to, by showing his hand.
Well, I don't see what he's got you, Doctor.
I myself must admit I cannot see that you are any nearer to finding the murderer.
On the contrary, sir, the case is nearly solved.
Well, I don't see how you figure that one out, Doctor.
Elementary, my dear Lestrade, elementary. One of the three people under suspicion followed me to my house tonight. The second bomb was thrown at approximately 7 o'clock. Now, it's only a question of finding which one of the three cannot account for his movements at that time. Then we shall know the murderer.
You want to cross-examine them again, Doctor?
Yes, Lestrade. Bring them in, please. One at a time. Colonel Schweiger, where were you at 7 o'clock tonight?
Discussing the military tactics of Clausewitz with Mr. Carter of the Home Office Guards.
Great Scott, that's what you were doing at 11 o'clock this morning, too.
It would take many days of discussion for two students to appreciate all the subtleties of Clausewitz.
Yeah, I'll check on that again, Doctor.
Oh, thank you, Lestrade. And please ask Madame Verona to come in, will you?
Questions, questions, and still more questions. Where was I 7 tonight, you asked me? I was listening to more babblings from that stupid young Englishman. Ask him for yourself.
Mr. Adams, where were you at 7 tonight?
With Madame Verona in her boudoir.
There is a curious sameness about the pattern of life in this house, is there not, Herr Doctor?
Well, I checked on Colonel Schweiger's statement. It was true. He was talking to Carter at 7 o'clock, all right. Well, could the other two account for themselves, Doctor?
Well, once again, they alibied for each other, but this time I begin to doubt them.
Oh, why do you say that, Herr Doctor?
Well, I would accept Madame Verona's alibi for young Adams. Obviously, she loathes the boy and wouldn't perjure herself for him. On the other hand, he worships her, and I'm certain that he wouldn't have any scruples about lying to provide an alibi for her.
Well, you've got a point there, Doctor.
Yes, I regard her with great suspicion. Here, come in. Yes, Mr. Adams?
Dr. Watson, I've been worrying about Madame Verona. I was afraid you wouldn't believe my alibi for her.
Indeed?
I have another, an unbiased witness, who can testify that Madame Verona was in this house at 7 tonight. Come in, Franz.
Jawohl, gnädiger Herr.
Franz, did you see Madame Verona at 7 tonight?
Yeah. I take up 2 glasses of sherry to her. It was a few minutes before 7.
Thank you, Franz. Thank you, Mr. Adams. I appreciate your concern. You may go.
Yeah. Seems to me we're still traveling in circles, Doctor.
On the contrary, my dear Lestrade, the case is solved.
Indeed. You astonish me, Herr Doctor. Who is the guilty party?
You'll know in a minute, sir. Lestrade, bring the 3 suspects in here, please.
Aye, sir.
When they are assembled, I will give you the solution to the mystery. Ladies and gentlemen, the mystery is solved, and I must apologize for any little inconvenience that you've undergone. You, Madame Verona, you, Colonel Schweiger, and you, Mr. Adams, have all unshakable alibis. Therefore, the solution's obvious. As my dear friend Sherlock Holmes has often said, eliminate the impossible, and whatever remains, no matter how improbable, is the truth. Therefore, the only person that could have thrown both bombs is you or yourself, Graf Otto von Heldenstein.
Why, George, I believe you're right, Doctor.
What have you got to say for yourself, sir?
That I, too, Herr Doctor, have an unshakable alibi.
Oh, what is it?
I was with you, Herr Doctor, when the second bomb was thrown.
What on earth are you talking about? I was alone, sir.
Oh, come now, old fellow, that's not true.
Holmes.
What?
Holmes, how could you?
Mr. Holmes. Well, strike me.
Don't be angry with me, old chap.
Well, you made a complete
fool
of me, Holmes.
No, not at all, my dear fellow. Not at all.
I've never seen
you. I suppose you got the real solution to the case, as usual, Mr. Adams.
Yes, Lestrade, I have.
Well, let's hear it, then. Might as well show me up.
Oh, my dear Watson, stop berating yourself. You really handled the case very well. You made only one mistake.
Huh?
May I revise that dictum of mine which you just quoted? Eliminate the possible, and then if nothing remains, some part of the impossible must be possible.
Which part?
Colonel Schweiger's alibi was valid. So was Madame Verona's, since it was corroborated by the trusty Franz. But what does your alibi rest on, Mr. Adams?
Madame Verona's told you I was here at 7.
Yes, but Madame Verona is addicted to the use of drugs.
I'm sure that you spotted that fact, Watson.
Yes, yes, well, I did.
Your mistake, old chap, was in not drawing the correct conclusion. Mr. Adams' alibi depends on the unsupported word of a drug addict. Now, the use of drugs notoriously destroys, first of all, the sense of time. Any trick such as the resetting of clocks could be worked on her without her noticing. Her word on a time alibi is completely valueless.
Then Adams is the man.
Fools, meddlers. Why don't you... He's a murderer and a traitor. Well, now that we're back in Baker Street, Watson, I may as well tell you that I had my suspicions of Adams from the first.
Well, you did? Why?
Well, my brother Mycroft had told me that he was suspected of being a traitor at heart. He's been under observation for some years. He was purposely given this assignment as a definite test of his integrity.
Well, I understand it all now, Holmes. It's the same. I did make an ass of myself in front of Lestrade,
too. Oh, don't worry about it, old chap. Please don't worry. You always can correct that impression, you know. Yours will be the last word.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, when you come to write this story in your memoirs, my dear fellow, you can always do a little, re-editing of your own part. Posterity never need know.
Doctor, that was really a swell story.
Oh, I'm glad you liked it. Sort of made me out of a bit of a fool, huh?
Oh, nothing of the kind, Doctor. I agree with Holmes. You did a splendid job.
Oh, you really think
After all, you did line up his suspects for him, didn't you?
Well, come to think of it, yes, of course I did.
And you did make the point that Madame Verona was a drug addict.
Yes, by Joe, so I did.
And you did say that Mr. Adams' alibi could be a lie.
By Joe, you're right. I did solve that case for Holmes, after all.
Tonight's Sherlock Holmes adventure is written by Dennis Green and Anthony Boucher and was suggested by an incident in the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle story, The Greek Interpreter. Mr. Rathbone appears through the courtesy of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Mr. Bruce through the courtesy of Universal Pictures, where they are now starring in the Sherlock Holmes series. The Petri Wine Company of San Francisco, California, invites you to tune in again next week, same time, same station. This is Harry Bartell saying goodnight for the Petri family. Sherlock Holmes comes to you from our Hollywood studio.
You've been listening to the timely audio presentation of The New Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. Copyright 2020 by Timely Audio. All rights reserved.